Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. Shay, it's Monday. That means Mailbag Monday. We got a lot of questions from the board. We appreciate everybody for sending them in. If you're not already, become a subscriber for $1 to the Bengal Tiger Podcast, and you get an entire year. I mean, entire year and a hat. So can't really make a better deal. But yeah, we have a lot of questions, Shay. Are you ready to dive into them?
I am. Let's rock. Got my stats pulled up. Not that I need the stats from this game.
Yeah, I don't know if the stats will tell you too much besides low numbers for LSU, but they got the win. That's all that matters, right? And if y'all didn't already, go check out our reaction podcast. I mean, that's doing great. I mean, in 24 hours to get 2K views, we appreciate all the support over there. So continue to subscribe, send to a friend, like, and comment, all that good stuff. It really helps us out. So let's dive right into it. We got 13 questions here. When I posted this, I didn't preface it by saying that I will also be doing a film study on the LSU pass game and comparing it to the Cincinnati pass game. So be on the lookout for that today on Monday as well. But as a result of me not prefacing it, we got a lot of questions about the receivers and a lot of questions about the offense. I grouped all of them together. So Go Tigers 107, Bayou Tiger, Bayou Tiger 22, LSU Lawyer 24. They're probably missing some others in there. All of them basically asked, what's the problem with the pass game? And we covered it on the last podcast a little bit, but I know you rewatched the game. I rewatched the game. I'm doing, like I said, a little film study, so I don't have to get too deep into it, but basically I covered the last podcast, but what have you seen?
Okay, so this is the first question we're rocking on, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let me reread this out loud because I'll take it in parts. When looking at the film, are the receivers having a hard time getting open? Seems like the line gives Daniels enough time, but we're not making any plays down the field or the position group that should be a strength. Okay, agree. It should completely be a strength. I don't think that, for one, there's going to be a myriad of issues here. I just went back and rewatched the game. The O-line was not perfect, and that's going to be the case. But I think a lot of things, when you look at that game, O-line let them down in certain spots. Not as much as the receivers let them down with two things. He's right about getting open. You can say, is this, and Matty B, maybe you'll dive into this with Cincinnati or getting a feel for this. Could even just be how wide receivers coach teach things, but Auburn, give Auburn credit. Auburn played well on defense, and their defensive backs blanketed LSU. I mean, they played physical. They played press. Malik Nabers was begging all night for, flags getting held, because the reality was, more than any game they've played, they were up in their face challenging them. So the receivers, in my mind, you have an elite room. Watching the game back, I did not think they, A, did a very good job of getting open consistently, and at least getting some separation. I'll get to that in a second. And I'm sure we probably got some Jaden questions in here, giving Daniels enough time, blah, blah, blah. But the drops were ridiculous. Like, there were plays. I know one was Malik had to turn to catch it, and maybe one just a little high. But if we're giving them credit for being that good, which they are, Boutte, Nabers, Brian Thomas, all those guys had drops. Mason Taylor had multiple drops. So a lot of what you saw, where why they only threw for 80 yards? Well, tack on another 80 right there and just drops, it felt like. The thing with Daniels is, and I think this is how this all intertwines, and I think that's why when Auburn played really well defensively, certainly in the defensive backfield, and Hall being able to get a good pass rush so Daniels doesn't have all day to throw, is, and Matty B, correct me if you feel differently, I feel like after re-watching the games in person and re-watching them, that Daniels very much, there's a reason he hasn't thrown a pick. He wants to see his guy get open. He's not throwing guys open very often. You'll see if you kind of slow down a lot of these looks, Kayshawn, Malik, Brian, they'll come out of their breaks. A good example would have been an RPO play that at one point in the game they ran, and it was a keep, might have been a little quick play action, but I think it was RPO, and Brian Thomas goes up, and he's supposed to just run a slant, and Jaden keeps it, overthrows him. Well, if you slow it down, you can tell Jaden's ready to make the throw or getting ready to make the throw and should have made it just a few split seconds before he did, when Brian is still engaged with the receiver and kind of selling his route before he comes in. Well, when Jaden holds it a bit and waits for that to happen, he kind of airs it a little bit. By that time, you know, it's already – Brian doesn't have a play on it. So I think it's – to wrap this all up, in that game, the receivers didn't catch the ball, and they did a bad job getting open consistently. And an overarching theme, which happened in this game, is Jaden wants to see his guy be open. Like, he's not throwing it before you've even come out of your break yet, right? It's like they're – he just wants to trust that he's not turning it over and that he sees your eyes and that you open your body to him, whatever it might be. So there's that's on Jaden. Other parts are on the receivers. Other parts are on the O-line. Emory Jones was up against Hall, reigning, what, SEC defensive lineman of the year, or what, at least of the week. What was he?
Yeah, one of the week last week.
Week, so a beast. And the interior didn't play great consistently either. So – then toss in whatever about Denbrock, which you can dig into all that. I didn't think, like, I actually rewatching the game, I liked a lot of what they were doing more than I did during the game. It then just became, you made a bad, like, it wasn't a game full of bad reads. Like, it was, you dropped the ball nonstop. You weren't getting good separation. Daniels wasn't anticipating the throws like he could. And when you lump all that together, Matty B, you get, you stall out for a whole half until you get the run game going and then finally start to catch the football a little bit. They had drops in the second half. So for me, this game, like, I do not look at Jaden Daniels 8 for 20, 80 yards and say bench him. Like, rewatching the game, I thought they needed to do more RPO, which I thought he was solid at. He makes the good reads there. And I think he's trying to become more patient in the pocket, trying to go through his reads. But it's I mean, when you're out there and the bullets it's are flying process. And the pass rush is coming, it's difficult. And I'll wrap up my long-winded thought here, Matty B. I think that people need to understand when you've got a new offensive coordinator and you've got a new playbook and you've got a lot of new pieces together, it's on, like, the quarterback's the not the only person who's having to adjust and, you know, kind of continue to learn each game. We've seen that now with the receivers. We've seen it with running backs choosing the wrong hole to cut through. We've seen it with offensive lines. So I think it's a little bit of everything. I do not look at the 8 of 20 after watching that game again closely and rewinding it and say, man, Jaden Daniels sucks, and that's their issue. Like, that was not the only thing going wrong for them on offense.
Yeah, I mean, I basically I said last podcast that I felt like it was a little bit of – it was on everybody's plate, the mistakes and the shortcomings in the past game, and I completely stand by that. I think you're right on – pretty much everything you said. I wanted to see, and I'll get into this in the film study, like I said, they were so pressed up against the receivers. I wanted to see one of those, just a four verticals call at some point. Like, there's a ton of four verticals called in the NFL and the college game, just to, it's kind of just like a free-for-all type play where you just let your receivers go make a play and you don't have to throw the ball deep and the receivers can break off a route if they see something change. But they just felt like there was no max pro chug it deep to Malik or to whoever else on a go.
I think there was one Malik play. They went deep. He was actually covered, but he got the pass interference. It was like right outside the goal line. And they probably took it from about midfield. So there were a couple shots, but sure, you'd like to see more.
Yeah. So that's my only thing is, and check out the film study later on, but I felt like at Cincinnati there were a few more shots deep, and I don't know if that comes with trusting Desmond Ridder. I don't know if that's Desmond Ridder being more optimistic in throwing those shots, but also,
and Desmond Ridder is a good quarterback. He's in the NFL,
so that, and Desmond Ridder is a better quarterback than Jaden Daniels. I think that's safe to say. My thing is, Jaden, you mentioned it, is so afraid, I think, of throwing interceptions that if the read's not there, obviously he'll tuck and run, but more than anything, I feel like he just locks in on that receiver and is scared to go to the second or the third or fourth one at times. But overall, I, like you said, offensive line, receivers, Denbrock, everybody, I think, and had a hand in that type of performance.
I want to reiterate this, because I think it's true. If you go back and rewatch the game, is what you're saying about Jaden correct about, like, not going through all his progressions when he has time? Yes. From looking at the game, like, more often than not, way more often than not, there were a handful of times where Jaden should have pulled the trigger, should have thrown, somebody was open. But more often than not, everybody was covered. Like, I just didn't think, I thought Auburn played well on defense, and I thought LSU did a bad job of creating separation.
I agree. I thought we got to give Auburn a little bit of credit here. I thought
that's what I'm saying. Defensively, when you rewatch that game, put it on the receivers. If you felt like, well, Auburn's not good enough, they should have got open. They were not getting open. Auburn was all over them.
Yeah, and like I said last time, Auburn's defensive line, you could tell it was in Jaden's head a little bit at least early on to me. Whenever I watched him, a couple throws were rushed. Derek Hall was almost in his face. I think it was on everybody there. All right, enough on that question. We got like 12 more, so we gotta start going here. Captain
Planet, that's probably the biggest question. What's up with the offense with Jaden and the receivers?
For sure. We got like five of them. So
yeah, and look, I'll say this too. I'm curious if Kelly says this or if they just do it more. The RPOs were working. Auburn basically, and there were times where they were dropping Jordan Hall like in between the two safeties. He's the D lineman that we talked about. So they were doing kind of different things with him, but it would just be a linebacker spying Jaden or the Hall just wreaking havoc wherever. And then they trusted that all their DBs could press, keep their safeties there, and that they would lock down LSU. And they did. I'll say though that when I look at, I'm kind of split, Matty B. I think that Auburn played well. I don't think LSU played well enough at a lot of spots beyond quarterback. And, oh, man, where was I? I was going somewhere with this thought. The RPO. When they act like that RPO, when they went to it, started to take that middle backer who was spying Jaden kind of out of it because he would have to either commit to the run or just trust it and stay with Jaden. And that worked for him, and they were making nice reads. So curious if they don't do more of that, especially with teams that want to just sit there and spy Jaden.
Yeah, it's even though I want to give Auburn its credit because I do think it played well, you still have to pass more for more than 80 yards.
No doubt.
That's unacceptable. All right, Captain Planet 246 asked, were the defensive miscues in the secondary due to miscommunication, new defensive scheme, tactics, or just flat-out blown plays by individual players? I think it was a little bit of both, but I mean, the big plays were busts to me. They were pretty much just individual players miscommunicating. I mean, those are all on the same. Those are all busts to coaches, like miscommunications, blown plays, all those stuff, like miscues. They're all busts. And so I mentioned a play last podcast where Mekhi Gardner came up on a 3rd and 25 to stop the Robbie Ashford from running and gave a pass over his head. I mean, there were plays like that throughout the game. I think the first one where Sage Ryan got caught, and I believe Jay Ward came up from the safety spot to try to stop Ashford from running. So it's just like, I felt like they were a little bit too eager to stop Ashford from when he got outside of the pocket as far as the secondary goes. So yeah, just some busts. That was my view of it.
Yeah. I mean, what the two big plays that they had, scoring plays, were what, 60 something yards and 40 something yards, and what the, well, I guess the Jarquez Hunter went for like a lot, 60 something, and then they scored from there. But that was a bust. And then I think just on that first drive, Matty B, that after Seven Banks got injured, that it just sort of was an odd feel. You got him into a quick third down, and then boom, you have a bust and they score. So like, I'm not worried about those defensive busts because they scored 7 points in the first quarter, scored 7 points right away to start the second quarter. So basically everything happened in that first few possessions for Auburn, and from there, nothing. So
yeah, I mean,
I'm fine with the defense.
You know how I feel about the defense. I'm over here saying that they should hold Auburn to like 10 points. And so, yeah, I have high expectations. Obviously that'll be tested this week with Tennessee, but we'll get into that later. All right, Mr. Virgo asked, what is the disconnect between Jaden and Kayshawn on the field? And obviously we just talked about the pass game a lot, so, you know, but it's a different question. I don't think there is a real disconnect. If you're going to say what's the disconnect between Jaden and Kayshawn, I mean, Brian Thomas, Jarae Jenkins didn't have a target. Like, it's not just Kayshawn that's not eating here. It's everybody who's not eating. So I don't think there's a disconnect. I think if you're an offensive coordinator, you can try to get Kayshawn the ball more on screens, on jet sweep stuff, different actions. But at the end of the day, I think they trust everybody in the receiver room so much, they're just kind of just letting it go. So,
I think too, there were drops. If you watch it, Kayshon was doubled a lot, bracketed, and he said it. He was like, look, if they're doing that to me, I'm taken out of the place. The other guys get to eat. The reality was the other guys weren't all getting open, or they were dropping passes. Kayshon was dropping passes. I'm totally with you. It's not just Kayshon. It's all of them that, whether if it's getting on the same page with Daniels, however you want to say it, they've got to get open. Daniels has to anticipate a bit better, and they've got to catch the football. So it's sort of all of them there for me in a row. And I'll also say, I don't think you mentioned, like, I like how Denbrock goes to, like, when it was clear that Kayshon, after the first however many series, was not getting involved, they went to him. I can't remember, it was the second quarter right out of half, but they went to him on the jet sweep, gave it to him. Mm-hmm. He's got green grass, and the running back, I can't remember, it was Noah Kane or Josh Williams in at the time, but went low and blocked on, which you literally, it's like the only thing you can't do right there. And he does it. And eventually Kayshon just ran right at him, hurdled him, gets the first down. But
yep.
If you don't do that, you just get the block. That one could have gone for a lot. And that's, hey, they're doubling Kayshon. Let's give it to him on a sweep. So
yes,
you forget about it because they tried it and it got negated by a penalty. So,
yeah. I mean, there's always ways to get him the ball if you want to, but I feel like at this point they're kind of just like, nobody's getting the ball too much or too little. Like everybody's getting too
Mason Taylor.
Yeah, Mason Taylor's getting too much. There you go. All right. Cairo Tiger asked, I heard Brian Kelly mention Ollie Gay had 2 years of eligibility, and it got me thinking, if the season ended today, who would stay and who would go to the draft? He goes on to say Gay is great, but not sure he'd appeal as a high draft pick. And yeah, there you go.
I think this is a whole podcast different question, and I'm not trying to skip off on Shiro Tiger. Was it Shiro Tiger?
Cairo.
I think he said it.
Cairo.
Oh, it's Cairo.
Like
Cairo.
Chiropractor.
Okay, Cairo.
I said it wrong. It's my fault.
And then you confused me. I remember he answered it though on the board, and then I forgot. I don't want to skip over his question, but I think this one has so many elements because, like, there are so many guys that are draft eligible that if they continue to play well, we'll be in this conversation, like Jaquel and Roy. You've got Greg Brooks and them that are older guys. So I don't know. I'm looking around and I would say like Kayshon and Ojulari would be two that I would say would leave as underclassmen and get drafted high.
Kayshon, I think if we don't have to keep this long, but Kayshon and BJ are obviously first round picks to me. Jaquel and Roy, I think, would get drafted a day two at some point. So around two or three, most likely. I mean, he had a very high preseason, you know, hype, very high preseason grade assessment. So I think Jaquel and Roy gets drafted, even though he hasn't stood out, which we'll talk about him later. So you have those three. Other than that,
I thought he played great against Auburn.
Yeah, I agree. So you have those three, and then you look at a bunch of guys that could be day three guys, but I don't know. Like Jarek Bernard Converse, Greg Brooks, Jay Ward, Jaden Daniels, John Emery.
How old is Garner? Is Garner a fifth-year senior? He's a grad student.
Garner, I don't remember Garner's grade, but yeah, Garner, Fouché. So, I mean, you got a bunch of guys that like could – obviously get drafted. Jare Jenkins, I think, could be a day three guy as well. So it's like, you know, you got a bunch of guys there. I don't know how you want to distribute that or disperse.
Did we
that,
even but... answer the Ollie Gay part though? I don't know what Ollie Gay's already graduated and he's a captain this year. Like I could see him saying this is it.
I think so too. I think that was the plan before he got injured, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, I think we talked to him at one point over the offseason. That was the plan, but he got injured and decided to come back. I think he goes to the draft and it's so hard because Ollie Gay's physical traits to me are so impressive. Like he's just so big and strong. Like it's like he should be putting up, you know, elite numbers. Sometimes it just doesn't really add up with him. So I don't know. I don't know if NFL teams would draft him off potential maybe, but he is pretty kind of getting older at this point. So yeah, I mean, I think Ollie Gay would definitely get drafted. Again, it's just kind of when would that happen? Round 3, 4, 5, 6, I don't know. So, all right, I think that answered the question well enough, kind of. Jay Bramblett?
Yeah, no.
Draft
Let's
and
see.
punters.
Iowa City Tiger fan. He's a long time member here. LSU went from being the least penalized team in the SEC to one of the most penalized teams. That seems the opposite of the accountability that was preached all of the offseason. What gives in the Auburn game is half of the penalties were on special teams.
I think you could say that about like the entire season. How many of the penalties have been on special teams? Like
then I would the, 40%? Then they had that block that chop block or whatever that negated the Kayshon handoff. Yep. You're gonna have a hold every game. You're gonna have an offsides. You're gonna have a hands to the face. Like
it doesn't.
Some
even...
of that happens. I feel like overall, especially if it's like a special teams thing too. Like overall, I just think when you have a completely new team with more transfers than anyone, and a completely new staff, and new playbooks, and new schemes, and all that, that like guys will find themselves out of position or getting something happening to where they end up committing a foul or penalty to try to negate it and get away with it. So that's one area like I don't worry about, because I would think with how much of a disciplinarian and how long Kelly's coached 30 plus years with the track record he has, you don't just win that many games and just be one of the most penalized teams in the country. Like they'll clean that up. I just kind of think that's a bit of the first month into the season, just trying to get the car to work type thing.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, so they have 32 penalties on the year for 278 yards. I mean, at least 12 of those.
Four of those were on special teams in the first half of Auburn. So now
I'm saying on the season, 10 or 12 of those have to be special teams ones, right? So, and which is unacceptable. Like if you just look at it, like special teams, you should just be, all right, get the ball and give it to the offense. Like you shouldn't be having to do anything crazy. But so yeah, I mean, I take that into account for sure. And then it doesn't feel like the offensive line has been too hold happy.
No, really. That's why I don't think that they've gotten a ton of those.
Like how many times are they even starting that like first and 20 after a hold? It doesn't feel like very often where they're being backed up like that. So you can give them some credit on that. Your receivers aren't holding in the run game. Like, I don't feel like holding has been a big issue.
I think they got hit with an illegal shift last game, which was like very much on where Kayshon was coming over and Kane was still moving. And
I think there were a few
or illegal motion fouls or something like that.
I mean, I remember the Harold Perkins personal foul in the Florida State game. Quellen Roy got called for unnecessary roughness or taunting, whatever it was last game. So there's two right there. I don't know. If you go through it, I don't think it's a major issue at this point, except for on special teams. Special teams, it is an issue. Offense and defense, I think they're fine.
Where are we at? Goshe51Z said, how much leash are we realistically giving Emery, John Emery, at this point, with him turning the ball over at a far higher rate than our starting quarterback?
Well, everyone turns the ball over at a higher rate than Jaden because Jaden – doesn't throw the interceptions or doesn't even throw anything close to interceptions. But yeah, Emery had another fumble.
I remember in fall camp, remember there was even, we were at practice that day, but then there was a video that came out with he fumbled and Denbrock said, look, man, you got to keep your head in it because we're not going to stop going to you. He was like, we're not going to stop feeding you the ball. So if we're going to let Denbrock answer that question, I think the leash is, they want the leash to continue to get longer. I think ball security is something that Frank Wilson's going to have to just continue to drive home with John Emery. But he made the best play of the game on the run where he scored. And the wheel route, which I loved, he catches and gets down. You know, he's athletic enough to get downfield very quickly and punch that one down to the inside, you know, the goal line. So I think it's a rotation, right? But I don't think Emery's ever going to out-carry everybody, especially when Goodwin gets back. But I would think you want the leash to get longer because you see what happens. I mean, he was five touches into a game where he had 40 receiving yards and a 20-something yard touchdown run, you know?
Yeah. I think especially with Goodwin out, we don't know how long Goodwin will be out, but especially with him out.
It sounds serious compared to what initially. It was like – he's day-to-day, and then it was he's got a severe hamstring injury. So, I mean, that could be a month.
I have no idea. It could be, but definitely doesn't feel like he's going to play the Tennessee game at this point, just off feel. With him being out, I think the leash is pretty long at this point. If he does fumble again, you know, Josh Williams will continue to get a lot of the carries, and then maybe we see some Noah Cain. But, and obviously you don't want to have fumbles in back-to-back games, but you know, if he doesn't fumble, if he fumbles one more time for the rest of the season, I'd be okay with it, because he is obviously the most versatile, the most potent, and probably the most talented back they have at this point. Doesn't mean he's the best backer, you know, on every down should be getting the carry or anything like that, but you know, he's clearly talented. So
let's see. Famous Amos, what are the odds we see a change at OC this offseason? If you had to put a percent on it, zero. I don't understand why you would want to. If I'm Brian Kelly, I'm getting Den Brock to figure this out. And again, I don't think it's all on play calling or scheme. Like,
I think
guys weren't getting open.
Yeah, real quick. I think you want continuity.
Yeah, I don't see why you want to start over again.
I wouldn't want to start over again, like you said. That's the biggest thing. And so even though I do have, you know, my questions about Den Brock at this point, and I think they get better, I think from a continuity standpoint, I would want him to be back for year two. Now, if it continues going downhill, then maybe. So I'll put it at like 10, 15%.
Right now, I'll put it at zero for the sole purpose of I don't think that's the crux of the issue here. And how are you grading out Will Campbell and Emory Jones so far this year, true for freshman offensive tackles? Good for me, good as can be. Emory Jones had a hell of a task against Hall. Campbell had a hell of a task against Verse in week one. They both had a big task in their first ever starts together against a really good State defensive line in front seven. Like, that Jaden Daniels is alive. That means they've done something, right? So
yeah, I would grade pretty high. This point, Will Campbell, I mean, based on my expectations and based on obviously Will Campbell's highly, highly rated guy, you know, we expected him to be good. I mean, I think he's been every bit as good as we can ask at this point. So I'd say like an A-, something like that. And then Emory Jones, B+. I mean, only three games for Emory Jones, but like B+.
Yeah.
Something like that. Pretty good.
Al Smith said, first time asking a question. Hey guys, what's up, Al Smith? All right, Matty B, you take this one. Defense played phenomenal Sunday for the most part, Saturday. I'm reminded of Brian Kelly's comments after Florida State. He said they coached the players in a way that made them overthink it. I felt some of that happened on defense with pursuing AU's quarterback when he moved out of the pocket. So, and that created chaos in the secondary. So, does Hooker, who's Tennessee's quarterback, pose the same running threat as Ashford? And if he doesn't, does that help our secondary with broken plays?
All right, thanks for the question. Hooker is not as fast or as eager to run as Ashford because
He's got a million times better arm than Ashford.
Yeah, Ashford didn't really have an option. And LSU's plan was obviously, you know, to try to contain Ashford at the line of scrimmage, which is why they were so eager to try to contain him. So I don't think it's definitely not the same offense by any stretch of, you know, by any way, shape, or form. Tennessee's offense is going to be incredibly versatile. It's going to be potent. Hooker's arm is really, really talented. I was impressed with him last year, and they're continuing to stack up really good games on offense. So I don't think this will be the same at all, because I think Hooker's arm is going to keep the secondary honest at all times. Like, even if Hendon Hooker rolls out of the pocket, you can't lose your man because he will make you pay. Ashford made them pay. Imagine what Hendon Hooker is going to do. So, yeah, we'll get into that. Obviously, Wednesday is when I usually do my opponent film breakdown. And so we'll get into that then. But, yeah, it's a completely different animal. Completely. This Tennessee offense is very, very good, obviously, for anybody who's watched college football. Very elite. Yeah,
no doubt. RoseShooter19 said, I'm under the impression Brian Pullian's recruiting his tail off, butt off. You know what he says. Would you trade a top five finish in recruiting this year for some special teams mistakes the rest of the season until Pullian gets entrenched in the local scene? The core of this question to me, these two things aren't married together at all. No. I think that LSU can finish in the top five or six, and I'm not – like, I think that's a complete staff effort. I would never say that was one person in Pullian or anyone, like one single guy out there holding together a class. That's not the case at all. That's never the case with any team. And entrenched in the local scene, I don't think that really matters. I think they have enough Louisiana people here at the local scene for those coaches to handle it. the special teams mistakes just need to be cleaned up regardless of if he was an amazing recruiter or not. And I would say that Polian would probably say the same thing. Here's the other thing about special teams. Like, they've already said too, like, there's been like some rhetoric out there of like, oh, well, this is just what happens when you don't have enough scholarship guys. Like, watch the coverage units on kickoffs and punts. Every starter was out there at Auburn.
I was about to say
it was Harold Perkins, Fuchsia, Greg Brooks, Jeray Jenkins, Malik Neighbors, Sage Ryan. Like, these are your starters at all positions.
I think Sage was called for a penalty on one of those punt returns. So
yeah, so all those guys are out there. There should be no excuse. Berman and Cheerios, how long before Harold Perkins is starting, given how much run he gets in the second half and how much better our defense looks with him? Can you really keep this kid off the field to start the game? Matty B, you've weighed in a lot there. Thoughts?
Yeah, I've said this. And then Brian Kelly said this also in his press conference, I think on Thursday. It's like they're obviously keeping him in situations where he doesn't have to think, where it's straightforward, attack the quarterback or spy the quarterback in this last game's case. There has been nothing where he is having to comprehend at a high level like Mike Jones. As much as we want to get on Mike Jones and say, like, maybe he hasn't been great this year, the jobs that Mike Jones and Harold Perkins have are vastly different. Just vastly different. They're not even playing the same position, basically. I mean, literally sometimes Harold Perkins lines up at the Jack position, as we know. But, like, when Harold Perkins, I look at him as basically like a roving attacking linebacker. So that's how I look at him. I don't look at him as like a true inside linebacker where Greg Penn and Mike Jones are playing, or even Michael Baskerville is playing. It's a different position. It's not even, I don't know. So I love how they're using him right now. I think continue using him in that way. He's still playing like, what, I don't have the stat, the numbers in front of me, but he's probably playing like, what, 50% of the snaps as a true freshman. Like, it feels like he's on the field a ton. So I think they're doing exactly what you need to do with Harold Perkins. Let him get on the field and either attack, spy, keep it simple, and go make a play.
I agree. Mike Stuklasa says, is this an observation? But he got it in as a question. It feels like expectations on offense are politely unreasonable, or called unreasonable when people complain. Yet on defense, we're elite. Why can one third become elite with piecemeal transfers? No Mason Smith and starting a freshman and Perkins. But meanwhile, we say the offense sucks and we get told, well, it's a 6-6 team. You're full of transfers. Watch it game to game. Isn't competent offense much easier for the most part in college? This isn't the NFL. I've always been under the impression that defense is usually what is ahead out of the gates when you've got wholesale changes than offense. Like, if you ever remember in like spring ball or fall camps, like, they'll always be like, the defense won the first few weeks and the offense could never move the ball. So, like, I think offense takes a bit longer to get everybody on the same page than defense. And I think that's what we're seeing right now. We are seeing it take a minute to get everyone on the same page, and everyone's got their deficiencies in certain areas. But once they kind of can start to individually turn the corner here, I think the product looks better. So
yeah,
I don't think it's unreasonable to say the offense isn't good, but I don't think it's, I don't think it's unexplainable. Like,
I feel like, and I've mentioned this before, I felt like, this is why I was so high on House coming in. It felt like the personnel of this defense fit what House wanted to do immediately. Jack position, B.J. Ojulari. A secondary that didn't have to do a ton, but was a veteran and knew how to, you know, execute at an SEC level. I feel like Matt House had what he needed more so than Denbrock. And you could argue, obviously, you can argue that's a flaw within Denbrock, that he needed a tight end, or he, you know, needed this and that.
Need two tight ends or one, yeah. You know.
Yeah, needed some elite tight end play probably, but that is a flaw. But at the end of the day, I think that's just kind of where it is. And I agree with you. I think the defense is usually ahead of the offense going into seasons.
Last question. Tigers in Cleveland 15. Does Jaqueline Roy need to start having more of an impact on games? It won't hurt, but I did think statistics-wise, he led them in tackles and solo tackles against
this
Auburn.
Game.
If he plays like that every game, that's the Jaqueline Roy you want. You don't want him to disappear and just sort of be eating up a block and you don't really ever hear from him.
Yeah, this was the first game he really put up big stats, because to this point in the year, he has half a sack, 1.5 tackles for loss, 16 tackles. So yeah, he had 6 tackles this last game. So this was clearly his best statistical game, even though we know defensive tackles aren't graded on their stats for the most part. Like, right, it's about how you eat up blocks. It's about if you can stop a guard from getting to the second level, you know, all those little things that coaches will watch and you have to really be watching offensive line for. I agree. I think he's been actually pretty good throughout this season. So he's obviously just not putting up the stats. Last year, he didn't put up the stats either, but everybody thought he played well. So I don't really know what the difference is. I think last year, everybody saw the Pro Football Focus graded him like the number five defensive tackle in like the pass rush or something like that. And everyone was like, okay, he's good. I haven't seen any PFF stats from this year. So I don't know if people are waiting on that or not. And yeah, that's it. I mean, Bourbon Cheerios asked basically, what was your strategy for 11 a.m. kickoffs? I guess I'll ask you, when you were here like 15 years ago, did you have a strategy for 11 a.m. kickoffs? Were you hitting the bar scene at 5, 6 a.m.?
No, you don't want to do that. You want to just start at the house, and then you want to make your way to campus, and then you want to just get an hour to make it worth your drive out there early, 2 hours, hour and a half of hanging out at a tailgate. And then you want to get into this game about 30. So you want to get into this game about 10:30, right? Because then you get to see a little bit of warm-ups, and then you're kind of right into it at 11. Yeah. Say get out there for about 8:30. Means wake up. I'm going to need a 6 a.m. wake up for everyone out there.
Mm-hmm.
Get your shower. Pack everything the night before. You don't want to be scramble mode on Saturday morning. So everything's already packed. You've got your outfit laid out, your game day fit. 6 o'clock, wake up, out of the house by, I need you out of the house by 7:30. Whatever happens between 6 and 7:30 will work. You're into campus and onto your spot by 8:30. You got a couple hours to hang. You've made your way to the stadium, you're in. You've got about 10, 15 minutes to kind of take in things before the game.
There you go.
Solid plan.
Fit in as many shots as you can. Get the blood flowing, and then you go from there.
Well, and this is really for people who are out there worried about how to handle this. You got to think long term. You're going to walk out of that game at 2:30. You're going to walk out of that game. You've got a whole day ahead of you.
Pace yourself.
You got a whole day ahead of you. So it's the inverse of a nighttime pick. Treat it that way.
There you go. All right. Appreciate all the questions. As always, we will do this every single Monday. So you know, become a subscriber. I usually post the topic on Sunday night after I like forget to post it on Sunday afternoon. So Sunday night, it's up for everybody to send their questions in. And yeah, tomorrow we will have the recruiting podcast as always, and kind of go from there. If y'all don't know the schedule already, you know, post game, mailbag, recruiting, preview podcast on Fridays, and then it's game time. So four pods a week. And yeah, that's all we have for y'all today. Follow us on the socials that are right there. I can never point correctly. Right there, and become a subscriber for $1 for an entire month, and you get a free hat as well. The purple doesn't really match the red, but that's all right. We got the hats. All right. Thank you all for joining us, and we will talk to y'all later.